We are the Forsaken. Forsaken.
You're listening to a Corpse Run Radio minicast. Hello, darlings, and welcome to Corpse Run Radio minicast episode 21.3. I do apologize for not getting an episode out last week. It was the week of Halloween, and I should have known that I'd be too busy to get an episode out. This week isn't that much better, actually. You may be able to tell I have a cold right now. Yuck. And of course, it's the week of BlizzCon, and I am packing pretty much right now. I took a break just so that I could get this episode out to you, because I can't leave you hanging 2 weeks in a row. I'm sorry about last week. If you're going to BlizzCon as well, be sure to say hello if you see me. You can tweet me at JunosWow and let me know you're there. And if you're watching the virtual ticket, I hope that you truly enjoy it. Alright, I really must be going, so let's get this mini party started, shall we? This week, we're starting out with a song off of Songhammer's brand new album called Take a Ride on My Rocket, and the song that we're playing is called Ironborn. We also have Grand Nagus with information on the Hinterlands, Jack of Skulls with 2-Minute Lore Malagos, Wowhead with BlizzCon information, and Novel 87 with some BlizzCon hype. I hope that you're having a great week, darlings, and I hope that you have a wonderful BlizzCon, however you're watching it.
And I was drowned for my God and my King. I was a ship by my 12th in the spring, leaving the coast is a treacherous thing. I learned to kill for my God and my King.
What is dead cannot die.
What is dead cannot die. We are born from the grime. I will take what is mine. What is dead cannot die. What is dead cannot die. We are born from the grime. I will take
Hello and welcome. Today I want to talk about the Hinterlands. It is one of my favorite zones in the game, has been pretty much since I came there the first time, way back in vanilla when I played my first main, a Forsaken Warlock, through this zone, entering it from the Hillspread foothills, which back then was the only way to get through there. Oh yeah, I almost forgot. There is another entrance after all, which is the mountain path leading from the Hinterlands to the Western Plaguelands. Now, after the Cataclysm revamp, we got a tunnel leading from Arathi Highlands to the Hinterlands, mainly because the Hillspread foothills have been totally taken over by the Forsaken and there is no more Alliance presence. So the Alliance needed a way to get into the Hinterlands to continue questing. The Hinterlands is a very interesting zone in my opinion, game-wise as much as lore-wise, because we have one of the biggest troll cities in the entire game located in the Hinterlands, which is Jyntar-Alor. It is the home of the Vile Branch tribe of trolls. In addition, we have the Witherbark trolls. They reside in the temple complex of Shadwa-Alor. And then we have the Altar of Zul as the third troll area, so to speak. The Alliance has settled in the Hinterlands in two major areas. Quel'Danil Lodge is one of the few High Elf towns, building complexes, however you want to put it. I don't even want to call it a city, which it isn't. It's just a lodge, a group of buildings. And then there is the dwarf residence called Airy Peak. It's the home of the Wild Hammer Dwarfs under the leadership of Falstad Waldhammer. So after the War of the Three Hammers, the Wildhammer clan decided to not go back to Ironforge, but to simply go off by their own, and they found the Airy Peak and settled there. So if you try to look at the individual classes that the dwarves can play, if you play a shaman, it is most likely going to be a Wild Hammer Dwarf, because they, by moving to the Airy Peaks, pretty much focused on the practicing of shamanistic rituals and spells and whatever. Also, they found that they went quite well with the griffins that were native to the Airy Peak. And if you know your dwarven lore, you know that the griffin riders in the dwarven society are also almost exclusively Wild Hammer Dwarfs. So that comes from them being at Airy Peak as well, since, as I said, the griffins are native to the Airy Peak area. And they trained the griffin riders, and then they would fly on the griffins into battle, wielding the powers of the shaman, mostly like thunder, lightning, stuff like that. A good example for that is if you play through Twilight Highlands, you see that there are Wildhammer dwarfs there as well, and they work with their griffins to fight the evil forces, like the Twilight cult forces as well as the Dragonmaw. And there is one quest where you have to mount on a griffin and fly up, and then you have a couple of abilities on your action bar where you can throw a thunder hammer, and that does damage to a mob and it weakens the forces, and then you have to destroy the final boss up top on a shard after you have weakened it with the hammer throw. So this is another example of the shamanistic side of the Wild Hammer, as well as the griffin riding side, which are in a certain way one. So we have the flight points in this area, which are 4 in total, 2 Alliance, 2 Horde. The Horde's flight points are Revan Tusk Village, and the other one is Hiriwata Research Station, and the Alliance one is Airy Peak, of course, and then Stormfeather Outpost. The Stormfeather Outpost and the Hiriwata Research Station have been added for convenience with the Cataclysm revamp. There have been quite a few revamps going on in the zone. For one, with the hinterlands, we have one of the zones that inhabits a portal to the Emerald Dream, one of four on Azeroth, as I have talked about in earlier segments. The area here that holds the portal is called Seradane, and it's in the northeast corner of the area. Another major workover has been given to Jinta Alor. Actually, multiple reworks of the zone, or of the area of the zone. Originally, it was a very, very tough area to go through. All of the mobs were elite, and you had to go in there with a full 5-man group to have a chance of surviving, even at level 60. Because I think I remember the area was level 50-ish. So a level 47, 48, 50 elite mob wasn't as easy to get down as the nerfed versions that we have now. It was one of the major challenges back in vanilla days to go through. But nowadays, the area is redesigned to be level 30 to 35. So you can imagine it is very much easier to go through now, especially since the mobs aren't even elite anymore. So first they took away the elite status of the mobs that were in the high 40s, and then they cut down the level range from 40 to 50 to 30 to 35. So it's really, I can't even begin to say that I understand, but yeah, it's just sad in my opinion, because I for one loved this area very much. As I said, it was a challenge to go in there, and it was great fun to do it. But yeah, that's reminiscing. It might be like again glorifying the days past, but it was just a thing that I really like to do. And when Blizzard decided to almost nerf all the open area elites down to non-elites, that was when it started to become so much easier to level and to play the game. There was not much of a challenge, at least in this zone. And with Cataclysm, you even have a NPC that flies you up, at least for the Alliance side, up into Jinta Alor's highest places, where earlier you had to fight your way through mobs and mobs and mobs to get up there. But okay, enough of that. I still like the area, but again, it lost much of its appeal by being nerfed so drastically. That's it for me for this week. If you have questions or suggestions for me, if you want to let me know about some zones you want to have covered in upcoming segments, feel free to tweet me at RandNagus1, write me an email, towerofcommerce@gmail.com, or you can write into the show. That would be corpserunradio@gmail.com. Next time I'm going to talk about Mol'Gor, the Tauren starting zone. Looking forward to that too. There are quite a few nice things going on there. This has been Grandnagus, Rule of Acquisition, number 19. Satisfaction is not guaranteed. Bye guys.
Malgos was a proto-dragon of the Blue Flight. He was most clever of his fellows, and together with four others, he defeated the great evil known as Galakrond. For their achievement, he and his fellows were given the role of Guardians of Azeroth by the Titan. Malgos was named the Aspect of Magic, granting himself and his flight dominion over the Arcane and tasking them with ensuring that it not be abused. For millennia, Malgos and his Blues upheld their duty, until during the War of the Ancients, when all but a few dragons helped Naltharion the Earth Warder craft the Dragon Soul to combat the demons. When Naltharion, now known as Deathwing, unleashed the power of the Dragon Soul upon the demons, they all lived happily ever after. Just kidding, Deathwing quickly turned on his own kind, and Malgos, who was closest to his brother, the Earth Warder, immediately led a charge of his entire flight in tow. Power of the Dragon Soul decimated the Blue Dragons, leaving only a few alive. Malgos himself was flung far, and he only survived due to his quick application of a magical shield. His body and heart broken by his failure, Malgos receded from Azeroth for 10,000 years. And as they passed, Malgos slowly lost his mind in his grief and guilt at his flight's decimation. During the Second War, Alexstrasza the Lifebinder was captured by the Dragonmaw Orc clan, who used Hu Yung as mounts of war. Coriolstras, or Crassus, the youngest of the Lifebinder's consorts, sought out Malagos' aid to rescue the Aspect. Malagos initially refused, but was convinced when Crassus mentioned that Alexstrasza may be able to use her powers to revive his flight, and that Deathwing had led to the Aspect's capture in the first place. Eager for revenge, Malagos assisted Crassus and the human mage Ronin in defeating Deathwing and the Dragonmaw Orcs, and the power of the Dragon Soul was released back into the dragons after it had been given so long ago. Now empowered, the Blue Dragonflight finally began to rebuild. As the campaign against the Lich King began, Malagos took notice of the large number of spellcasters recklessly using arcane magic. This reminded him far too much of the use by the Highborn that had attracted the Burning Legion to Azeroth during the War of the Ancients. He decided the lesser races' use of magic was unacceptable and declared war on all those who would not side with him, thus sparking the Nexus War. Together with the Wormrest Accord and the Kirin Tor, the heroes assaulted Malagos' sanctum and defeated him, thus ending his tale. Thank you very much for watching. If you have a comment for future videos, please leave it down in the comments. And until then, I've been Jack of Skulls, and this has been Dalaran Brilliant's 2-Minute Lore.
Hello everyone, and welcome to a brand new Q&A. This video was made in advance, which I normally don't really have the time for. I usually work on a weekly basis, but tomorrow I'll have to go to the airport, I'm going to catch a plane, and I'm going to visit BlizzCon, I'm going to visit America, I'm gonna go on a holiday. I wanted to make sure that you guys and girls wouldn't be lacking any content while I'm away, so I made this one a little bit early, as well as a few videos that are ready to go as I enjoy my little holiday, so that you won't be lacking any content. There were a fair few questions sent in, and hopefully you won't even notice that I'm gone. So with that out of the way, let's dive right into it, starting off with... Hey Noble, do you share the opinion that Blizzard is releasing too many books outside of the game for players to be able to follow the lore? For example, without your videos, I never knew how Garrosh ended in Warlords of Draenor and was left in the dark. By the way, great Q&A, smiley face. Alturius, I assume you mean Garrosh at the end of Mr. Pandaria with the whole trial in the novel War Crimes. Now, I personally agree with the idea that too much important lore is told within the novels and not within the game. I don't think there would be a problem if Blizzard was able to take these stories and tell them properly within World of Warcraft itself, but there are a fair few examples in which this didn't happen at all, or it was done very poorly. Take the bombing of Feramore, for example. The events were described in the novel Tides of War, and this event pretty much started the entire storyline with Garrosh during Mr. Pandaria. They tried to tell it with the in-game scenario, but we ended up with a very simple cutscene, not explaining all the big events leading up to it. The scenario itself was, you know, not the best. And afterwards, with Jaina trying to flood Orgrimmar, deciding not to do it, that never made it in. At other times, events simply don't make it in at all. Your example is a great one. Garrosh's trial definitely had to be part of the game. It's what started off Warlords of Draenor with Kairos and Garrosh escaping. There's a whole new reality now, all that awesome stuff, and it never made it in. They did add a free short story to the WoW website, which explained the moments between the escape and the formation of the Iron Horde, and it's great that this story is free and available for everyone, but it would have been so much better if it was actually shown in the game. I don't believe the Visions of the Past during the Legendary questline did it justice. They could have added a scenario where you see Garrosh on trial, maybe a Vision of the Past, maybe an outside movie kind of thing, but honestly, what we got with the Legendary questline, with those visions that you follow, and Chromie is wondering like, hey, what's Garrosh doing here? I don't think that was enough. And when it comes to the lore shown outside of the game, I feel like it should be additional information and not key elements to the storyline. Lords of War, for example, it was a great addition to get an idea of who the warlords were, what to expect within Warlords of Draenor. The Blank Scroll, a minor example, which is a free short story, it had an awesome story to tell, but it's not a key element to the overall storyline. Even a novel like Vol'jin Shadows of the Horde did it right, in my opinion. It talks about Vol'jin's time recovering from the attack during Mr. Pandaria. This led into the Dark Spirit Rebellion, and in this case, it didn't feel like Shadows of the Horde played a key element into the overall storyline. It did give some awesome additional insight into the mindset of Vol'jin, the whole Horde is family, Garrosh doesn't get that. I loved that part of the book, and yet 5.3 told the story brilliantly without the need of the novel to support it. It was an extra thing, but it was not a key element, and in my opinion, that should be the case for all the novels. Next question. Hi, Noble. Do you know anything about Falric? You know, the boss from Halls of Reflection? I know only that he was in Warcraft 3, but nothing more. Is there anything else? Also, I'd love to hear you say something in your national language. Keep up with the good work. Cheers from Mikkel. Beautiful last name. I've had the question stored for quite a bit, as you can see, because I was never able to get my hands on the Death Knight manga, but now I do, because I wanted to make sure if there weren't any key details, so now I'll be able to give you a more complete answer. Falric has been mentioned together with the other boss Marwyn a few times in the story. The first time takes place within the novel Arthas, Rise of the Lich King, in which young Prince Arthas is waiting for the survivors of Lordaeron to make their way to the palace. By this time, Stormwind had fallen to the might of the orcs, word had reached the capital they were coming. Falric was on guard duty at this point, and Arthas had brought him a warm cup of tea. Such a visit to the guards and amongst the common people was not unusual for the prince to do. His father did sigh about it, but Arthas knew that no one was ever punished for speaking with him, and indeed, he sometimes wondered if his father secretly approved. These visits the prince made him beloved amongst his people, and Falric sipped his tea with gratitude as Arthas peered over the walls. The guards had not seen the survivors yet, but as Arthas watched, he could see them approaching. Falric complimented the prince's sharp eyes and was about to send Marwyn to inform the king, but Arthas told them that he would do it, and he quickly rushed out of there. That's the first interaction with these two guards, but Falric and Marwyn would later on join Arthas in his campaign against the undead, Falric by this time having earned himself the title of captain. They had known each other for years by now, which made Falric more forthright with Arthas, and high on the list of people that he wanted joining him on this mission.
We must help her!
Stay your blade, Captain. She can take care of herself.
Together with Jaina Proudmoore, they investigated the plague that spread across the lands of Lordaeron, and just imagine what kind of shock it must have been to the men. The undead were now walking the land. This was something they had only heard of in scary stories, but had now become a gruesome reality. Their former friends, their families, their citizens were infected by the plague, turned into the walking dead, and each of them had to be put down. Eventually in the storyline, they reached the point where Arthas decided to purge Trefholm, take care of the infected, and put them out of their misery. Several of their men, including Jaina and Uther the Lightbringer, they walked away from all of this. They could not stand by their prince as he purged Trefholm. Yet some of them did remain at his side, like Falric, who told the prince that he'd rather be hacked into 1,000 pieces than be turned into one of the undead. So together, they pushed on and they purged Trefholm. Mel'Ganis taunted the prince to follow him to the cold lands of Northrend. Arthas got a small army together, and he did just that. Mel'Ganis in the end was found, but the troops were overwhelmed by the undead, yet hope lingered on the horizon in the blade known as Frostmourne. Arthas believed that this blade would mean their salvation, so as he and the dwarf Mirrodin went out to find it, Falric and the rest of the troops, they stay behind to hold the lines long enough for Arthas to return.
Captain, I'll leave you to organize our defense. Let's move out.
With the cursed blade in his hand, he slaughtered the undead and he took his revenge by striking down Mel'Ganis. The prince then left them all behind after the victory, and even Falric had gone missing in search of the prince. One knight named Fasarion, he offered himself to go and look for these two, and in the cave where Arthas picked up Frostmourne, he did find the captain Falric, but not the man he used to know. He, as well as Marwyn, they'd been turned into Death Knights, and as Falric explained what the prince had done, how he had burned their ships, betrayed the men, he stabbed Fasarion and turned him into a Death Knight as well. Eventually, the prince and his new undead comrades, they returned to Lordaeron to slay his father and bring the kingdom to ruin. Falric and Marwyn were there with the prince, as bone-white as he and twice as merciless. They slaughtered the people of Lordaeron, eventually charged with the task of resurrecting new subjects out of the dead so that Arthas could rule over them and turn them against their own people.
Men, women, and children. None were spared the master's wrath.
For the longest of time, we wouldn't hear a thing about either Falric or Marwyn until we entered the Halls of Reflection in search of the cursed blade Frostmourne and a possible way of weakening the Lich King.
Falric, Marwyn, bring their corpses to my chamber when you are through.
As you wish, my lord.
Soldiers of Lordaeron, rise to meet your master's call.
After being with Arthas for all his life and even beyond, Faldrick and Marwyn are put under the task of taking care of us, yet not even these Death Knights nor the spirits of the soldiers of Lordaeron were able to stop us.
Marwyn, finish them!
And that's where the story of Faldrick and Marwyn ends. Next question. Hi Noble, do you wish that Warlords of Draenor never happened lore-wise? From Instagip. Instagip, this one is tricky to answer because I don't really believe that Warlords did a whole lot for the overall storyline. Pretty much all of the story took place on another reality, where the main initial threat to our reality was the whole Iron Horde invasion. They tried to pull the story back to the olden days of the very first Orcus Horde invasion, the Dark Portal turned red, Zela and the Iron Horde had teamed up. But unfortunately, that massive threat that we were supposed to be scared of, it was taken care of within the introduction patch. We were then forced through the Dark Portal to party in Alternate Draenor, and they tried to give a similar feeling as the novel Beyond the Dark Portal, as in, we can't let these orcs just do what they want, who knows what kind of damage they might do to us, they might do to other planets, we have to go in there and we have to take care of business. I noticed that not a lot of people really got that sense of danger or understanding of the storyline, because a lot of people understandably asked, why are we going to Draenor in the first place? Why not just bomb the Dark Portal or set some guards around the portal and be done with it? Because it was so easily taken care of. But I really think that they wanted to tell that story of Beyond the Dark Portal, of we have to go in and we have to take care of them. Either way, whatever story they tried to tell, we did end up an alternate Draenor, and there we did our thing. We helped this alternate reality against threats like the Iron Horde, the Burning Legion, there were the ogres, all the good stuff that we saw during Worlds of Draenor, we took care of these threats. All of these events, besides maybe the Everbloom dungeon, they stayed on this alternate reality, which didn't create a whole lot of fear or threat towards our reality, towards the overall storyline. How cool could it have been for us to, for example, lose our garrison for a while, be actually kicked off the planet and forced back through a portal, forced to defend Azeroth because the might of the Iron Horde is too great. That never happened, unfortunately. It all stayed neatly inside its own little bubble, until they decided to take the lore and started to mess it up on Twitter. No longer was the story of Warlords of Draenor in its own little bubble, since they decided that the Twisting Nether, it now transcends all realities. One single tweet caused the bubble to burst open, the story of Warlords of Draenor now spread out through the main storyline, it now became part of everything that has happened in Warcraft. You now had the Legion, Archimonde kill Jaeden, mainly that bit, it was affected by the expansion, it was affected by this tweet. No longer were we fighting against an alternate Burning Legion, this is actually our Burning Legion. Combine that with time travel, with possible duplicates, or maybe no duplicates at all, with the Draenei having the same origin story, and you end up with a very big mess. I really hope that they'll still reverse that tweet, still reverse that decision, because you have to ask yourself, why did they make this choice? They wanted to get us familiar with these orcs of old, right? With the storyline of the past, possibly, most likely because they wanted to get us ready for the Warcraft movie, but why make the Twisting Nether transcend realities? Was it to fight our Archimonde? Well, to be fair, any Archimonde fight without a World Tree to blow up would be pretty sweet, so I don't really see the need to make it our Archimonde. Was it then to send Gul'dan back to our reality? Well, considering that there are multiple portals popping up all over the place, we've got so many gateways between realities, it wasn't necessary to use the Twisting Nether for this. I speculated about a possible connection with Illyria and Tyrellion and the Twisting Nether, but all in all, it just doesn't seem to have that much of a purpose, at least from what I can tell. Compared to the overall storyline, it seems like this tweet causes more problems and more trouble than it actually adds to the storyline. So long story short, I personally don't really care about the story of Warlords one way or the other. You can easily disregard it when you look at the overall storyline. The start of the story, the start of the expansion, it was okay. I loved being able to see Draenor before it was destroyed. I loved some of the side stories. The cinematics and the voice acting were brilliant. And all of that, it was okay in general. I dislike, of course, that stories were cut out. I think this expansion probably has the worst ending they've ever created, with the whole Gromash being like, yeah, I was the bad guy, but now we did it, guys, we saved Draenor, I'm not a bad guy anymore. It just makes so little sense, and it gives you a headache if you think about it. But like I said, all of Draenor was in its own little bubble, and if you want, you can easily just forget about it. Dead on its own is of course saying a lot for the storyline of Warlords of Draenor, the little expansion that could, but simply didn't. Right everyone, this brings me to the last question for this Q&A, and as always, a little warning, I am going to speculate about things that might happen in Legion, so if you're desperately avoiding spoilers for Legion, let me just say thank you very much for watching, and please turn off the video right now. Hey Noble, since it looks like Sylvanas will be featured in Legion, and they mentioned she only has a few Valkyr, she may die. If that happens, do you think Lillian Voss would make sense as the new Forsaken leader? I know she had some serious hate for being undead, but a lot of time has passed since her resurrection. Wanted your thoughts on this as the lore master, big fan, great videos. Sylvanas' role in the story has switched the moment that she took revenge and we took care of Arthas at the end of Wrath of the Lich King. Up to that point, her whole motivation was to gather allies, get territory, build up troops, create some plague of her own, and she wanted to get revenge. With that storyline finished, they had to do something with the Banshee Queen. They had to give her a new purpose. So what they did was they gave her a short story in which Sylvanas threw herself off the top of Ice Crown. She ended up in Hell, to which the Valkyr offered her a deal. They would take her place in Hell, they would keep her undead existence going, and from that moment on, her role became all about surviving. Her Forsaken were no longer arrows in a quiver, as the short story described it, they were now her bulwark against the Infinite. Notice, by the way, that we don't really know what the Valkyr get out of this deal. Apparently this deal allows them to get away from the Lich King's control, from Bolvar's control, yet it seems like they simply exchanged one master for another. Some speculate that the Valkyr have alternative motives, that they manipulated Sylvanas into believing that she ended up in Hell, while in truth, that never really happened. Why would they do that? Well, one idea is that Sylvanas would create them, or perhaps even the Lich King, create the more troops required to once again launch an attack against the world. Her Valkyr are more than willing to resurrect the dead. Sylvanas herself has even offered to resurrect Lorthmar's Fallen during the Siege of Orgrimmar, so those troop numbers are definitely rising. That's one theory going around. Sylvanas being manipulated by the Valkyr eventually will figure this out, will stand at the Queen's side, will band together against the Valkyr, possibly the Lich King or the Dreadlords, but personally, I don't really see this happen during Legion. Now, if we take a look at her description on the Legion website, it says the following. The Forsaken's ruthless leader is a formidable champion of her people, but with the Burning Legion's invasion, the stakes for the Dark Lady have never been higher. Should Sylvanas perish, her demise will be the beginning of her eternal damnation. All that stand between her and this doom are her Valkyr, yet few of those Spirit Guardians remain. As her fate etches closer to the abyss, Sylvanas must decide how far she'll go to protect her people, and whether they're more precious to her than her soul. It seems like the description on the Legion website, it blows the previous speculation out of the water. Her demise will be the beginning of her eternal damnation. It seems like the Valkyr did not trick the Dark Lady, and that Hell truly awaits. She'll have to make a choice. Are her people more important to her than her soul? And from the short story calling them a bulwark, to me it always looked like she didn't really care much about her people at that point, and all she wanted was to stay out of Hell. Fate will push her closer to the abyss. The choice will have to be made, yet you have to wonder, is there truly a choice to make? Just think about it for a second. She'll have to make a choice between her soul or the Forsaken or her people. The Forsaken player base is not going to be removed from the game. We know that much already. You can't just pick up a player base and say, okay, you play Forsaken, you now play Blood Elf. You play Forsaken, you now play Tauren. That's not going to happen. So, what kind of a choice is there? Not much. Now, how this choice will be forced upon her, that's entirely up for speculation. Perhaps it's going to be connected to the Worgen storyline. We don't really know, but we can be pretty damn certain that the Forsaken players are going to be fine. That leaves us with only one option, right? Sylvanas will decide that her people are more precious to her than her soul. So that means the end of Sylvanas Windrunner, right? That's what the options give us. But considering how people react when I say even the slightest negative thing about the Banshee Queen, I feel like Blizzard knows better than that, better than to cause riots in the streets. I can't imagine them really removing Sylvanas as the Banshee Queen. There are too many fans who love her character, who love her story, who don't want that changed. So what can they do then? What does it leave us with? Well, how about a storyline in which she does place her own people above her own needs, yet for this choice she doesn't get sent to hell, instead she gets rewarded. This could be with additional Valkyr to keep her going. This could be with, say, that she'll get one more life, right? She'll get one more life, there are no more Valkyr, she only has one life left, yet the afterlife that's waiting for her is no longer going to be hell or torment, and for the sake of her people, she decides to stick around and no longer toss herself off the top of Ice Crown. There could also be something with the Holy Valkyr that resurrects her back as a former High Elven self, perhaps. Those are just a few possibilities, and this is all pure speculation, so pretty much anything can go. Now say that they do go with what I believe is the unthinkable, say that Legion really means the end of Sylvanas Windrunner, who could replace her? Lillian Voss, as you mentioned in the question, it could definitely be an option. Right now, as you also mentioned, her character is completely against anything that's related to the undead. She doesn't like necromancers, she doesn't like herself, she doesn't like the Forsaken, but perhaps she'll be able to find peace with her undead afterlife, or perhaps she'll even find respect for the Forsaken people. Another that I suggest is Coltra Deathweaver as a possible follow-up. He was taken to the Undercity by Sylvanas during the Cataclysm to remove any final weaknesses. He had a friendship going on with the Alliance Death Knight Vessarion, and Sylvanas did not like this. It's possible that Sylvanas and her people have been able to brainwash him. Perhaps they've been working on him to get him ready for leadership over the Forsaken. We don't really know what Coltra has been doing in the Undercity, what Sylvanas has been doing with him, so that's definitely also a possibility. You'll notice that I say a lot of possibilities, a lot of perhapses in this answer, since when it comes to speculating about this, we don't really have much to go on, and it's very hard to predict the future. There is, however, one final addition to the story that I want to talk about, and that's the return of Illyria Windrunner. Illyria is the oldest of the Windrunner sisters, and she's been lost together with Tyrellion ever since the Burning Crusade. We have no clue what these two have been doing, where they've been, but Blizzard has said that they're going to make a return to Legion, so we can expect Illyria to return. A lot of you have asked me how this is going to go down, and honestly, I think after the events in War Crimes, a reunion with Illyria, it's pretty damn difficult to make any changes to Sylvanas. In War Crimes, Sylvanas opened herself up to the first sister, to Varisa, yet in the end of the storyline, Varisa, she backed out of their plans and left Sylvanas with a broken heart. I doubt that the Banshee Queen will easily open up her heart once more, not after being hurt like that, but like I said, it's extremely hard to predict all of this, and I can't wait for Legion to finally arrive so we can finally get some answers. So with that final question, ladies and gentlemen, we've reached the end of this Q&A. BlizzCon will soon be upon us, and I'm so freaking excited to be there. I wonder how much information I'll actually be able to catch, but to be honest, the main reason why I go there is to hang out and just experience it. Even if it's only once, I want to experience this. For those wondering what will happen while I'm away, well, to be fair, not much with the channel, to be honest. Hopefully you won't even notice that I'm gone. I won't be covering the information from BlizzCon right away, as I've done in the past. I'm actually going to give myself a week or two to actually enjoy the holiday. Once I get back, I'll probably make a vlog or two out of the things that we see over there, maybe a quick update here and there, but I'm not going to cover it as I've done in the past. I'm not going to sit 48 hours like, this is the information, here it is, here it is, here it is. That's not going to happen this year. Now for the Mondays, for the lore days, I'm going to start with telling a story that a lot of you have requested over the years, and this one is gigantic, so it's going to be quite a few parts. This also means that the Q&As are going to be on hold for a little bit, but it doesn't mean that you can't leave questions down below in the comments or send them in over at Ask.fm. It might still be used in a future Q&A, it's just going to be a little bit longer delayed. If you're looking for a more direct answer to your question, and you don't care if it's featured in a video or not, then you're always welcome to send me a tweet or leave me a personal message on Facebook. Links to all those places are down below in the description, and once BlizzCon is done, hopefully we'll be able to enter the Legion beta and start covering what's coming up. Time goes so fast, ladies and gentlemen, it's incredible. We're nearly at the end of the year. Oh man, it's gone fast. It's mind-blowing. But for now, it's time to wrap things up. As always, thank you so very much for watching, everyone. Have a great week. Subscribe if you like my videos. Leave a like on this one if you enjoyed it. And until next time, guys. See ya!
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to WoWhead's Downtime Tuesday. My name's Panzer, and today I'm going to talk about the happenings in the past week in the World of Warcraft, which is basically just BlizzCon hype. So I hope that you enjoy the video, and if you do, remember to rate it thumbs up. We'll be right back. quickly, I'm going to just get this out of the way because I know people are going to ask. My filming setup is a little different right now, and it was just because I was being lazy. The last video that I filmed, I did an unboxing, so I used this Surface, and I was like, well, I don't feel like moving everything, so that's why it's being filmed this way. Yes, the wall is two different colors. I painted this side, I got lazy and didn't paint this side because I was like, oh, they'll never see it in a video, and here we are. Also, using my old mic because my new mic is a Razer mic, and the Razer drivers and the Windows 10 drivers are, like, having some conflicting issues right now. I don't know. I'm just going to leave them to work that out and use my old mic in the meantime. Let's get into the BlizzCon hype train video choo-choo. Anyways, let's talk about the BlizzCon weekend chronologically, which means we're going to start with Thursday, which isn't technically on the weekend, but work with me here, people. Work with me. On Thursday, November 5th, from 6 to 11 p.m. at the Hilton Anaheim on the 5th floor, which is the rooftop, Wowhead is going to be hosting their pre-BlizzCon party, which also happens to be their 10-year anniversary birthday party. It's going to be really exciting. I am so stoked to be there. Hafu is going to be the stage host. There's going to be tournaments and all sorts of fun stuff like that. I'm going to be doing the live stream portion of the party, so you guys care about that, right? It's going to be at twitch.tv/wowhead from 7 to, I want to say, about 10:30 p.m. We're gonna have tons of cool guests, contests, prizes, giveaways. Let's talk about the guests for a second, though. Are you ready? Get ready. We're going to have the fabulous Nerd Crendor, Terpster from Yogscast, Chinglish, the lovely Michelle Morrow, Towley, Elohim, Noble, and more. We're going to have cosplayers walking around the party. There's going to be beverages themed to World of Warcraft and other Blizzard games. There's going to be a whole Legion art gallery. It's all art submitted by Wowhead users. We're going to have a gaming area. There's going to be Blizzard developers everywhere, prizes and contests and giveaways. I think I already said that, but it's worth reiterating. So if you're going to the convention, please join us at the party. The venue is massive. It holds like 1,600 people. We're going to have a ton of entrances, so there shouldn't be any lines. Anyone can come. There is no age limit. There is no cover fee. Please come hang out. It's going to be a great time. If you are at home and you can't make it to BlizzCon, hang out with me on stream. See who stops by. Say hi to your favorite person. Even, I mean, they might not be there, but you can still say hi to them. That's okay. Please come watch the stream. It's going to be super fun, and we're going to have giveaways, and I'm really, really excited, and I hope that you're excited too. Moving on to the actual BlizzCon convention, first I do want to point out that while it's a little too late to actually go if you don't have a ticket yet, but you still can get a virtual ticket and watch the show from home. It's $39.99, which includes all of your in-game goodies and a front row seat to everything going on at the convention. One of the nicest part about it is that you do get replays for 2 weeks, so you can kind of prioritize and watch the things you want to watch, and then you can go back and watch other things later. People usually like to watch their esports stuff first because there's like spoilers involved, and then they can go back and watch like art panels and design panels and stuff later because that information is a little less time expiration datey. Does that make any sense? So yeah, if you have not gotten a virtual ticket yet and you won't be going to BlizzCon and you're staying home, I would highly recommend getting one. Last year, I did not go to BlizzCon, got the virtual ticket, did not regret it. It was really, really nice. Plus, you get to see the closing ceremony and all of that. And since we're on all this topic, I thought maybe it would be cool if I did like a segment where it was like, Panzer's must-sees at BlizzCon 2015. So here's that. From 11 to 11:45 on Friday is the opening ceremony. This is usually broadcast on Twitch for free, so even if you don't get a virtual ticket, you can watch it. There's generally huge announcements here, which I would guess we're going to see the Warcraft movie trailer during the opening ceremony. That is not coming from a place of knowledge. That's coming from a place of assumption, so I could be very wrong and look very stupid, but we shall see, and hopefully I'm right, and then we can all just bathe in the hype together. From 12:30 to 2 o'clock on Friday is the Legion panel, so if you are excited about the new expansion for World of Warcraft, this is a must-see. From 3:30 to 4:30 on Friday is the Hearthstone What's Next panel. This is going to talk about the future of Hearthstone and taverns and inns and fireside gatherings and whatnot. Immediately following that, from 4:45 to 5:45 is going to be the Overwatch What's Next panel, which I think is going to be really interesting because we're still so early in Overwatch. It's going to be cool to see what they have coming up for us because it's also soon, right? Then, of course, from 6 to 8:30 are the contests. There'll be the costume contest, the talent contest, the movie contest, all that stuff. And that's all broadcast on the virtual ticket. Honestly, that is one of the things from last year. I thought the virtual ticket had a better view of all of that stuff than you're going to get anywhere sitting in the crowd. So that's a really good one to watch on the virtual ticket. Saturday from 1 to 2 is the Legion Game Systems panel. This is going to talk about things like artifact weapons, talents, class changes. It's going to really talk about like the meaty changes that are taking place in Legion. So if that is something you're interested in, you're definitely not going to want to miss that. Now, the next three things that I'm going to tell you that you can't miss actually all overlap. So this is another one of those situations where having a virtual ticket comes in really handy because you can't watch them all at once. It's not possible unless you're like a Time Lord or there's three of you, in which case that's awesome. From 12:45 to 3 o'clock on Saturday are the Heroes of the Storm's World Championship Finals! Yay, esports! From 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock on Saturday are the Hearthstone World Championship Finals. And from 2:30 to 3 o'clock is the World of Warcraft Q&A. I think this is one of the best things of the entire convention. This is if you are a World of Warcraft player, you don't want to miss this. It's really cool getting to see like your fellow players like directly interacting with developers in those way and asking in that way. Words are hard. Directly interacting with developers in that way and asking questions that maybe you wanted to ask or you've heard a lot, like bounced around in the community. It's just really cool to watch. And plus, like sometimes memes are formed, you know? Memes.
Isn't Falstar dead? From Day of the Dragon? No,
he survived, and in fact, he was the leader of Airy Peak in Vanilla WoW through Wrath of the Lich King.
Right, of course.
Right.
Yeah, Alex, what's up with that?
And of course, from 6:30 to 9 o'clock is the closing ceremony with Linkin Park, and it's funny because I didn't realize what a big Linkin Park fan I was until people were like, oh, I don't even care about Linkin Park. Like, who cares about Linkin Park? It's a dumb band. No one wants to shut up! Linkin Park is a good band. You leave Chester and Mike alone, okay? Okay. So yeah, apparently I'm a lot bigger of a fan of Linkin Park than I thought. Now this part you're probably going to want to skip right over because who cares about Panzer? But if you are going to the convention and if you want to meet me, there are a few ways to do that. Of course, I will be at the Wowhead party on Thursday, which is at the Hilton Anaheim from 6 to 11 p.m. So maybe we could say hi to each other there. On Friday, I will be at the Jinx booth from 7 to 8 p.m. And then on Saturday from 10 to 11:15 a.m., I will be at the Jinx booth once again because they can't get rid of me, man. I'm like, person herpes. What? Why did I say that? And if you're at home and you can't make it to the convention, but you care about what I'm doing at the convention, on Thursday you can watch the Wowhead Party live stream from 7 to 10:30 p.m. I will be hosting that. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. On Friday from 3:15 to 5:15, I actually have been given the opportunity to stream from BlizzCon. I don't know what I'm streaming yet. I'm really hoping it's Legion, but who knows? It could be Overwatch. It could be StarCraft. I mean, who knows? But I hope that you'll tune in to watch me. It'll be at twitch.tv/tradechat. I think Chinglish is going directly before me, so please check him out as well. I will also be vlogging whenever I can. It's really hard to edit videos and upload them at the convention because I don't have a lot of time to like sit down at a computer, but I will do the best I can to try to get some vlogs up while I'm there. And then of course, as soon as I get home, I will be in a hole of editing, like hibernation editing, a cocoon of editing where I'll emerge and edited. I'll stop. There'll be videos when I get home, I promise. On that note as well, starting next week, I actually have a new series coming to my channel. I know I was talking to you guys a couple weeks ago about wanting to add more content to my channel, and I've partnered up with Zam's site, Overking, which is like, it's like Wowhead's brother or sister. It's Wowhead's sibling, but for Overwatch, and I'm going to be making bi-weekly videos with Overwatch news, and then maybe once it gets to the point where there's enough news to do videos every week, I'll do videos every week, but I'm really excited. So I'm going to start next week after BlizzCon. I think I'm going to call it like Over Wednesday. I haven't decided yet. Name pending, but that I can't decide if that's brilliant or terrible, and that's always a really scary line to be walking. Now, if you couldn't tell already, this video was very much winged. There's no script here. I have just been like all over the place, and I apologize. I'm so crazy, like all over the place because of BlizzCon. I'm helping to plan the party for Wowhead. I'm doing a bunch of stuff for Wowhead. My schedule is so packed. Like, if you guys know, I'm big on like planners. My planner doesn't fit all of the things that I have to do for BlizzCon. So I have to have like a separate planning. It's unreasonable. So I'm kind of all over the place today. I apologize, but I did want to make sure that we had like a moment to chit chat about my BlizzCon predictions. I try to do this every year and I'm generally very wrong, but who knows? Maybe, you know, if I say enough things, eventually I'll be right, right? For World of Warcraft, I really think that we're going to get a Legion beta date. If not a beta date, we'll get like a winter 2015-2016, or, you know, beginning of the year 2016, or spring 2016. I think we'll get a beta date, or at least an idea of when the beta is coming. I do also think that they're going to announce that with 7.0, with that pre-launch event that we're getting, that maybe there'll be a dungeon to go along with it, because they've been doing all of this stuff, especially with 6.2.3 coming up. They've been doing so much stuff like focusing on dungeons and really trying to get players back in dungeons. I think that a logical next step would be to add a new dungeon. So I think that's going to be like the big WoW announcement this BlizzCon. Like I said, beta date or beta idea, rough idea of when it's coming, and maybe a new dungeon. I would love to see something with, like, if you pre-order Legion, you get something kind of like the Tyrael's Charger that we got a couple years ago, but I don't know, man. I'm not sure that they'll do that, even though please do it, Blizzard. Please do it. As far as Hearthstone goes, I think we're going to be getting a Legion-inspired adventure mode, because why not promote one game within another game, am I right? So I think we're going to get a Legion-inspired adventure mode, and I think what would be really cool to go along with this would be a new Demon Hunter hero, and maybe his hero power could be like Sargeras Sight, where every time you use it, you can see one deck that's in your opponent's hand. One card that's in your opponent's hand, or maybe like one card that's in your opponent's deck, or I don't know how it would work, but I think Sarge's Sight would be a cool power. I am so all over the place. More coffee, less coffee, I'm not sure. Clearly, my coffee levels need to be recalibrated, though. In the realm of Overwatch, I think that we're going to get at least two new heroes announced, because we did just get that D.Va hero, and because of the D.Va hero teaser, I think we're also going to get a map announcement, and the map is going to be based on South Korea. I think that the big Heroes of the Storm announcement is going to be Overwatch heroes in Heroes of the Storm. I think they'll launch three at once, a DPS, a healer, and a tank, and I think that will be Tracer, Mercy, and Winston. And I also think that there's going to be some sort of pre-order bonus, like if you pre-order Overwatch, you'll get like Tracer in Heroes of the Storm or something like that. I don't think we're getting anything for Diablo and StarCraft. I'm sorry, guys. And last but not least, of course, the Warcraft movie. We know that we're getting a trailer debuted. I would really love the plot twist to be, though, that we're getting two trailers, like one from Horde and one from Alliance point of view, but that probably won't happen because that just sounds too magical and amazing for this world to handle. That leads me into today's question of the day, which I think it's pretty obvious that I want to know, what are your BlizzCon predictions? Let me know in the comment section below what you think is going to happen at BlizzCon 2015 and what you think about your answer. Check it out. Check out our answers to last week's question. I am so sorry for this video, guys. I am just all over the place. Like, I feel like a total nutcase. Like, I'm just, like, all over the place. But anyways, thank you for watching today's video. If you enjoyed it, please thumb it up, subscribe to my channel if you haven't already, and answer our question in the comment section below. Be sure to check back next Tuesday and every Tuesday, because Tuesday, to see if your comment is featured in our featured comments section. As always, everything I talked about today is linked in the info below, and I'm gonna go. I hope you're having a wonderful day, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I hope that you enjoy BlizzCon, whether it be from your home, from the WoWhead live blogs, from the live stream, from the virtual ticket. I just have a great life, guys. I'll see you soon. I love you all. You're in my heart. I gotta go. Goodbye. Bye.
A moment for people to come together.
We are thrilled that you are here.
Hello, BlizzCon. This community is everything.